Again, it's interesting that we focus quite a bit during the time of worship on this Christmas season being quite tricky sometimes. And it is. It is really hard. Things come to the surface at this time of year. And I think it is just because of the nature of the season. And I don't need to tell you that it's busy and it's full on. And it's just hard. And yeah, there does seem to be a lot of death, a lot of illness. All of these things just seem to emerge over this time. And I look back over my own life, and like when my dad was really, really ill, that was in the lead up to Christmas, and he died quite soon after, and it was just really, really hard. But it should also be a real time of joy and celebration, because you know, this is the time when we think about Jesus coming, Emmanuel, God with us, all of these things. But sometimes it's really, really hard in the busyness of everything that we've got to do to focus on that which matters. So the title of my talk today is What's the Hurry? Slow Down. And this is something in my own life that I'm trying to get to grips with. I'm trying to be more aware of. I'm just trying to just slow down a bit. And Dave will say that I do things at 100 miles an hour, literally. I'm a bit like, me and Kim, we're the same. We just run from one thing to the next. Even if it is going out the kitchen to make a cup of tea, we do it at high speed because we're just like that. But there's an interesting quote from the Mayo Clinic in America, and it says, and this is a bit American, and some of this will feel a bit American, but I don't make any apologies for it. So just sort of when I talk about the holidays, we're talking about the Christmas season. So it says, the holiday season often brings unwelcome guests, stress and depression. And it's no wonder. The holidays present a dizzying array of demands, parties, shopping, baking, cleaning and entertaining, to just name a few. But we mustn't let the holidays become something we dread. And I think particularly as women, and I'm not going to do down the men amongst us, because I know you all contribute and you serve us really, really well, and we're really thankful for that. But I think particularly as women, it seems harder at this time of year, getting everything sorted to try and create this kind of perfect Christmas. And the things I've seen on social media where, you know, mums up till 2 a.m. trying to sort out flipping Elf on the Shelf because the it's just a bit bonkers, really. And it's just really, really hard. And I'm really lucky because Dave helps me with the wrapping of the presents because he does the bows. That's one of his jobs. He has two jobs at Christmas, doing the bows and sorting out my Christmas present. But it's true, isn't it? As women. I mean, obviously, he is sorting out church lunch next week, so I'm not going to disparage him completely. But it is kind of hard work for us women. And my cousin's daughter, Amy, she's a freelance writer, and she's quite an interesting character. She largely writes in the world of feminism, and it is proper hardcore stuff. It's not for the faint-hearted. But she wrote an article in one of her things this week, and it just really made me stop and think. And this is one of the things she said. The expectation of the woman to be the homemaker and manager never feels stronger than at Christmas. They're the ones charged with serving the perfect dinner, no culinary effort spared, responsible for considering and buying beautifully wrapping a present for every niece, brother-in-law, distant cousins on both sides of the family. And even in the most progressive of households, they can find themselves reverting to a 50s housewife mentality on the 25th. And I thought, oh, what powerful words. I mean, there was a lot in the article I didn't agree with this whole thing that we have to dress up nice and all the rest of it. But I thought, yeah, it's really interesting. There's a lot of pressure on us at this time of year, and the whole season can be overwhelming. And what we can find ourselves doing is going into the new year having had no space to really enjoy what Christmas was ever really about. And what I don't want us to do as a church in particular, because we've got a lot to look forward to in 2020, is to go into the 1st of January exhausted because we haven't been able to find space over the next few weeks to enjoy, to reflect, to think about what, you know, the circle book is all about and all of that good stuff. So what we're going to do this morning, I'm just going to Have a look at a few things I can think are going to help us to minimise this kind of stress over the Christmas period. So we'll look at a few things to take us through that. I'm going to look at John Mark Comer's new work on eliminating hurry. I make no apology for standing here as a proper John Mark fangirl at this time. He's just awesome, just in many, many ways. And his teaching, particularly on the elimination of hurry, is just, it's hard, but it's quite impressive. So I'm just going to look at that a little bit because I just won't be able to do justice to it in the time we've got, and there's just too much in there. I'm going to look at Jesus and how he managed hurry and pace. And then I want to look at stillness and silence. And it's actually one of the things John Mark talks about in his book is silence and solitude as being a practice that we need to kind of engage in as Christians. It's really, really important. And I think probably over the Christmas season, that is something that can really, really help us take in moments of silence and solitude just to help us to get into a really good place. I know if Rich and Lou were here, they'd be going, what? That is never going to be possible for us. But even just the 5 minutes, 10 minutes away, silent, I think can be really powerful. And then I'm going to, hopefully, we'll get on to the power of choice. Because a lot of what we do, we choose to do, and we don't have to do it. We can say no. So we'll look at some things around that. So does that sound good to everyone? Yeah? Cool. Okay, so John Mark Comer's new book is called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And I've just picked this up from his website, and this is what he says about it. So there's some kind of, really good stuff here. It'll just set the context for how he's come to this place. And he's come to this place as well himself as somebody that was burnt out. I think he had some sort of breakdown, was trying to run big churches and all of this, and something had to give, and he's living his life in a particular way now, which has helped him with this. So he says, Dallas Willard, who is, I think, an American theologian mentor to many, once called hurry the great enemy of spiritual life in our day. And this is John Mark speaking. He says, I live in one of the most secular post-Christian cities in our nation, and the longer I'm here, the more convinced I become that he is right. Hurry is the issue under all other issues, the root cause beneath so much of the anger and anxiety in our cultural moment. And followers of Jesus are not immune to culture's pain. Many of us live with a low-grade fatigue and chronic anxiety that rarely, if ever, goes away. We career through our days at breakneck speed and wonder where God is in the fray. The reality is, most of us are just too busy to live an emotionally healthy and spiritually vibrant life. Hurry is incompatible with the way of Jesus. The love, joy, and peace that form the nucleus of Jesus' kingdom are all impossible in a life of speed. We must, as Willard went on to say, ruthlessly eliminate hurry. And then another one of John Mark's mentors, John Ortberg, who, again, he's written many, many books out there. He says, I can't live in the kingdom of God with a hurried soul. And what John Mark does in the book, he talks about a number of practices. And if you're familiar with his teaching, his kind of church focuses on practices. They call it the way of Jesus. They talk about apprenticing to Jesus as being a thing. And the thing that they look at is the things Jesus did, we must then go and replicate those. So the first one he looks at, and we'll look at this one in a bit more detail, is silence and solitude. And what he says, in the chaos of the urban digital age, it's easier than ever before to gain the whole world, yet lose your soul. How do we stay emotionally alive and spiritually awake? And he would suggest that one of the ways we can do that is by practicing silence and solitude. And this is a real challenge to us in the digital world, isn't it? And I'm a real big fan of digital technology. I work in digital transformation. I love social media for the things that it can help us do. But there's a sense that actually it can be quite damaging to our relationship with God, our connections with others, our need to be present. And he says, simply put, It's silence and solitude is this moment of intentional time to be quiet and alone with God. And in the modern era, that's a hard thing to do. And I think it is one of the things, though, that could really help us. And when he's talking about silence and solitude, he's not thinking about like when you sit down for your morning quiet time and you might have your Bible and you might put some music on and you might have your phone. He's talking about you sit down, you might have your cup of coffee and you might be reflecting out the window on God's creation. But it literally is that sense that you can just get rid of all the external noise, but also the internal noise that's going on and all the stuff whirring around your mind. Really, really powerful, I think. And again, it's something I've started to try and do on a morning. So rather than the first thing that I do when I get up is look at my phone, I'm trying to not do that. And then I'm trying to get ready in quiet. And again, even so, because we put the news on straight away and all of a sudden you've got noise, haven't you? Before you've even, you know, got out of bed, there's noise. So I'm trying to get up, get ready in silence. As I've said it to Dave, I said, I'm trying to get ready in silence. Can you? Yeah. Or or I might go down on a morning if Dave's having a lie and I might just sit for that first bit of the morning with my cup of tea before I even look at my phone, put Food Network on or go and do anything. And actually it's quite an interesting thing. It just sets you right for the day, focuses your attention on God. The other thing he talks about, and again, and this is really interesting, is Sabbath. And when he's talking about Sabbath, he's talking about an entire day set aside to stop working, wanting, worrying. It's just about simply being in God's presence. It's not a day off. It's not the day where you go out and you do all your shopping and you do all of that. This is intentionally, again, taking the time out to stop, to rest, to worship, to enjoy being with family, to switch off your phone. And I was thinking about this whole switching off the phone thing, because I know a number of us, obviously, we've got commitments to families, haven't we? And in particular, older relatives, all sorts of things going, all of these things, which you might say, well, I need to have my phone on. It needs to be there. But actually, sometimes, you know, there's power in just putting these things to one side. And again, he thinks that this is a really good way to kind of combat that tension between the spiritual and the digital world and materialism and all of these things. And Jesus did it. So if we're going to live the way Jesus did, then we might want to look at Sabbath as being a way that we can reduce the hurry in our life. And Christmas period might be a really good time to do that. And you don't have to go hardcore to start with. You can just take these things and just start to do them little by little. He kind of says in his work that you mustn't start with where you want to get to. Start with what you can manage. If it is just 5 minutes of silence and solitude, then that's great. What are you building up to, though? So that's interesting. The four S's that he talks about. The third one is simplicity. And again, I've talked about this over the last year or so, and I've talked about how we've decluttered and how it's all become quite freeing. And again, this is all about not focusing on what we don't have, but creating space so we can focus on what really, really matters. And I looked on a minimalist website for a bit of a quote. They are called the Minimalists, which is... which is great. And it says, minimalists don't focus on having less, less, less. We focus on making room for more, more time, more passion, more creativity, more experiences, more contribution, more contentment, more freedom. Clearing the clutter from life's path helps make that room. And I know that for myself. The amount of time that I've got now to spend reading, which is something I've always loved doing, and then gone, oh, well, I haven't really got time to do that because there's all this stuff that needs to be sorted, has really, really helped. And actually, everything should just come back to, when we're thinking about the simple life, is seeking first the kingdom of God. Everything else will be given to you, so you don't need to worry about stuff per se. And he taught, I mean, again, he's done something really weird with his wardrobe, which is not just around limiting the stuff he's got, but also around the fashion industry and slavery and all of these things. But he literally has, and this is in the book, and I was astounded by this, one outfit for every day of the week. That's it. every season, and he just rotates that because he's trying to just declutter his world so that he's not then having to think about. So he might have four black t-shirts or whatever it is that he has, but actually, I mean, that's just a bit too far the other way for me. But actually, it's just a lesson in, actually, if I'm not surrounded by all of this stuff, I don't have to worry about what I'm going to wear because I'll just go like that. And I think in the summer, I think it does, I don't know whether you've got to that bit yet, Alison, in a bit, but it's in the summer, I think he's got it down to two or three outfits. It's just bonkers. But yeah, so this is what we're talking about, living simply, uncluttered. And then lastly, he talks about slowing down, which I think really is something that we can learn from. You know, to live the way Jesus lived, we need to slow down. But it's not easy because we've got all of these things in our life that we need to deal with. But what we need to do is allow his pace and his practices and his priorities rule our life and not be ruled by all of the other things that might be seeking to distract us. He says, hurry will sever your connection to God, to other people and to your own soul. And you become what you sow into, don't you? So that's really interesting. You have to ask yourself, who am I becoming if I'm rushing around and doing all these things? Am I becoming more like Jesus or am I not? So what I would encourage you to do, just around this piece, around John Mark's work, you can read the book. It's up to you. You can do that. It's a really good book. His work is quite cerebral. It's really good. But all of his teaching on this stuff is available on his church website or via the podcast. So again, if you're not a great reader, it's all on there. You can listen to him. He's very easy to listen to. The other thing he's brought out with another chap who's written a book about hustle in the business world and escaping hustle as opposed to hurry, they've got a little weekly podcast thing going, 30 minutes. Easy, really easy to listen to. And again, John Mark Comer's church have got a whole raft of materials that on this stuff. And again, I think it was Sue picked up. It was on the YouVersion, wasn't it? So a five-day devotional reading that covers, again, some of the basics of the book, which, again, might be something that over the Christmas season you can tap into just to go, oh, yeah, OK, that's interesting. I'm going to have a think about some of these things. But again, don't go and try and go all in like he has, because you'll just end up exhausted probably by trying to fit it all in, or, you know, trying to be like that. But anyway, the really, really important thing is, though, in all of these things and in anything that we look at, is we look at Jesus' example for us. And the way that I see Jesus, as I've looked at this and looked at other practices, is actually he was quite relaxed in his approach. You know, he knew how to take time out. He knew how to have moments of quiet. He knew how to spend time with friends. He was very sociable. He knew what the job in hand was. He knew what he needed to get done. And one thing that I really think is important, and it will link to silence and solitude and stillness, is that he did withdraw often to a solitary place. And what he was able to really, really do, and I think this is helpful for us, is he was able to get the balance right between spending time in community and spending time with his Father. Very skilled at doing that. And in Luke 5 and verse 16, in a few versions, I'll just read out usual ones from me, Message, Passion Translation and ESV. It says, I think this one's the Message. It says, as often as possible, Jesus withdrew to out-of-the-way places for prayer. So I'm not saying that we should all just go, well, I'm going to withdraw often so I don't have to spend time with family I don't want to spend time with. I'm going to pray. This is about consciously making that decision to take yourself away, to regroup, to refresh, to get before God, to pray. And then in another version it says, but he would withdraw to desolate places and pray. And it says, Jesus often slipped away and went into the wilderness to pray. He knew how to do that, probably without being rude, I would suggest. So he wasn't in a hurry, though. His life, although when you look at it, was really, really full, and he had a lot to do and a lot to achieve, particularly in those 3 years of his ministry. He knew how to get this stuff done. And what I think he was really, really good at was he was ready to be interrupted He knew how to kind of live in the present. He knew how to give himself to people in those moments, but also to creation. And I think the thing about being ready to be interrupted is probably he had this gap between what he had to do and then margin, which I've got a definition of that. So he had this thing where, I might be interrupted. I know he knew everything was going to happen and all the rest of it, but I just think there's a way that we need to manage ourselves. And what he did was he really, really paced himself so he could get done everything he needed to do or everything he saw the Father doing. He didn't just jump from one thing to the next without finishing the job in hand, which I think we're all at danger of doing, is actually we don't do one job, we don't get that finished before we've moved on to the next, so we don't end up doing anything well. And in Luke 8, we see this. It says at the beginning of Luke 8, it says he continued according to the plan. So he knew what the plan was. He knew what he was going to be doing at that moment in time. He was travelling around towns and villages. He was preaching. He was spreading the message. The disciples were with him. And in this chapter of Luke 8, which is quite long, there's a lot going on. He's teaching and preaching. He's releasing people from demons. We see the woman with the issue of blood. Jairus comes in, you know, all in a flap because his daughter's ill. No one's going to die. You know, there was a lot going on. But what he didn't do, and again, and when you read it, is, you know, Jairus was making a right old fuss. Come, my daughter's going to die. You need to come now. And he went, well, no, I'm dealing with this now. The woman with the issue of blood, which he could have quite easily have gone, I suppose. Well, you've been like that a long while, you know, and actually Jairus is my mate and I'm going to go off and I'm going to sort this one out. He didn't do that. And what he turned round, even after the daughter had died, he just turned round to him and he said, everything will be all right. You just need to trust me. And then we know he went in and the daughter rose from the dead and it was all happy days. But what that shows us is that actually he took his time over people and he didn't just move on to the next thing quickly. And as I said earlier, love, joy and peace can't exist in that place of hurry. We are at our worst when we're rushing from one thing to the next. To live the way of Jesus, we have to slow down. And to experience the life of Jesus, we have to adopt that lifestyle. Right, so moving on then to, I'm going to mix between stillness and quiet, silence and solitude. But what we mean is, yeah, just getting away on your own, still, quiet, and taking some time out. And C.S. Lewis said, we live, in fact, in a world starved for solitude, silence and private, and therefore starved for meditation and true friendship. I think, you know, the value in spending time in the quiet, on your own with God, limiting the external and the internal noise, is hugely valuable. But it is hugely, you have to be proactive about it. It's not something that's just going to happen. You need to intentionally carve out that space. And also what C.S. Lewis said is, hurry is the death of prayer. Which has been something that has really focused my attention, particularly as we're going to be heading into this 40 days of prayer. Because what you can't do with the circle book, and you can't, well, you could, but I don't think you'll get much benefit out of it. You could go, well, I'm just going to read the day and then not do anything with it. Because otherwise, after the 40 days, you might come back and go, well, yeah, what was that about? Actually, you need to invest the time in it. Because, yeah, if hurry is the death of prayer, then that's all really, really interesting. So I would just encourage you, maybe over the Christmas season, to be getting into that, I suppose, that practice and that habit of doing this so that when you come to January the 1st and we're all in, you know, our 40 days of prayer, that you're ready to go. You know what you're doing. You're excited. You've worked out where your quiet spot is. And that might be at night. It might be in the morning. It doesn't matter. And Mother Teresa said, we need to find God. And he can't be found in the noise and restlessness. God is the friend of silence. Which, again, is really powerful. And another theologian, Henry Nouwen, wrote, without solitude, it's virtually impossible to live a spiritual life. We do not take the spiritual life seriously if we do not set aside time to be with God and to listen to him. And that's really, really challenging, isn't it, in this busy season, because we've got all of the stuff we've got on. We've got parties, we've got this, we've got that, we've got church stuff, we've got family that we need to see, all of these things. Carving out that time is going to be a challenge, and you're going to have to be quite disciplined about it and maybe find creative ways to do that. Maybe, I don't know, hiding in a cupboard under the stairs might suit some. But because we know, don't we, from the story of Elijah, that God's voice can't be heard in the chaos or the noise. It needs to be in that place of stillness and silence. And I'll just read out what it says in 1 Kings 19, 11 to 13, and this is the NLT. It says, "Go out and stand before the mountain," the Lord told him. "And as Elijah stood there, the Lord passed by, and a mighty windstorm hit the mountain. It was such a terrible blast that the rocks were torn loose, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, there was a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, there was a sound of a gentle whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And the voice said, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?'" I mean, how powerful is that, to get to that place, that quiet place where you hear those words, "What are you doing here?" And then you can enter in to that conversation with God. And we know in Psalm 46 and verse 10, it talks about being still. In the Message, it talks about stepping out of the traffic to take a long look at God. You know, ignore the politics. There's been too much of that going on recently, hasn't there? Look what Dave's done to the lights. Anyone notice that? It's, But, you know, if we just be silent and know that he is God, you will just, it will just be so powerful and so amazing. And I know we've tried to practice this on a number of times, haven't we, when we've had prayer times. So again, take hold of that scripture and be still and know that he is God. Because what will happen in these moments of silence and solitude is you'll discover a right and godly perspective for your life. And you'll be able to bring those things you are seeking him for really powerfully towards him when he asks, because you'll hear, "What are you doing here?" You'll know while you're there in that place. In that place, I think you will find out who you really are, because he will tell you who you are. And that'll be his words. It won't be how you see yourself or how the world sees you. It'll be about him. And I think probably in the crazy days of Christmas, it'll give you the strength you need to get through the rest of the day. In Psalm 23 and verse 2 in the Passion Translation, it says, "He offers a resting place for me in his luxurious love. His tracks take me to an oasis of peace, the quiet brook of bliss." That's the place you want to get to. Before then, you can then go and deal with the crazy or the chaos or the busy schedule of family, whatever it may be. So that stillness and quiet, I would urge you to just try and build that into your schedules over the coming weeks. And then lastly, when looking at this, I looked at the power of choice. And a couple of weeks back, I did say to Dave, I'm hoping he remembers I said this, I said, "What, we can't take another thing into the calendar now, between now and the new year. We're kind of done." And that wasn't that we had filled it every single day with stuff. You know, yeah, we are busy. We've got work parties. We've got church, all the rest of it. It's actually what that I was saying was, right, there's enough there now, but we need to keep a bit back. And actually, that's a really liberating thing, because what that enables us to do is to do something spontaneous, or allows us to be interrupted when something might come up that we need to deal with. The danger is when you cram your diary that is so full that you haven't got a moment between when you get up to when you go to bed at night, is that the noise will just drown out what God might want to do with you. And we've worked quite hard at that over, again, the last year, when we've been focusing on the power of rest, really, for us. And but that's not to say we don't get ourselves into this the busy state of things. And what I did when looking at this, I had a re-look at the story of Mary and Martha. And what we actually see in this situation, and I hadn't seen this before, and I always go, yay, I'm a Martha, look at me, is that she got herself into the situation she was in because of her own choice. And then she ended up moaning about it and complaining and rushing around. She invited Jesus into her home. It was her choice. It's really subtle, but it's really, really powerful. So I'll just read it out to you. And it's just flipped that whole thing on my head, that old poor Martha. But actually, she got herself into the situation. And it says in a reading from the Passion Translation, it's Luke 10, verse 38 to 42. As Jesus and the disciples continued on the journey, they came to a village where a woman welcomed Jesus into her home. Her name was Martha, and she had a sister called Mary. Mary sat down attentively before the Lord, absorbing every revelation he shared, but Martha became exasperated by finishing numerous household chores in preparation for a guest. So she interrupted Jesus and then started going on a bit of a moan, and she sort of said, you know, Lord, it's unfair that I've been left to do all of this. And he didn't turn around and go, well, you invited me in, you deal with it. He was really, really kind, and he just explained to her that you don't need to be troubled by all of these distractions. Just chill out a bit. And are these things really important anyway? But Mary had discovered the important thing, which was at that moment, was to sit and be with the house guest. She was undistracted. And I just think, you know, yeah, how many times have you done that? Invited loads of people around and then ended up rushing around and moaning about it and didn't enjoy it at all. Really interesting lesson in there, really subtle, but I thought, oh gosh, I haven't seen that before. But yeah, she got herself into that situation. So here's some practical pointers on choice. When you say yes, and as many of us will do, you do it with a glad heart and don't moan about what things you've chosen to do. Don't say yes to everything, especially social type events, because you've got a fear of missing out. I speak that to myself. I love socials. I love going out. I love this time of year for partying. But sometimes it's too much. It's okay to say no. Don't say yes to things where you know your own well-being will be impacted or out of sense of duty. And again, this is a time of year where it can feel about that, a bit like that, that we have a sense of duty. We have to see this family member and that family member and all of the rest of it. And I remember when Freddie was growing up and we used to have to do this weird journey between Bristol and Basingstoke so that both sets of grandparents could see Freddie on Christmas Day. When I look back on that, it was hell on earth, really. We didn't enjoy... I mean, we did, but it... Looking back, it was hard, wasn't it? And actually, we could have... Yeah, it was hard. It was hard for you. You were driving. But it was just hard. We didn't have enough space to probably fully enjoy. And again, difficult family situations. You know, yes, whilst I think there's something that says, yeah, you know, go into them. Don't go into them if you know they're going to be awful and you're going to come away feeling rotten from them. Do choose to serve the church at this time. There's a lot to do and be involved in. And don't just assume somebody else will do it. So next week we've got a full-on thing and, you know, there's plenty to be doing. We've got all of these things. So do serve the church well at this time. And as I've said already, do choose to leave space in your schedule so you can be interrupted or go and do something spontaneous. And also just leave space to rest, sleep and do nothing. I love sleeping. It is one of my favourite things. And I get grumpy if I don't get what I need. 10 hours, Pete's going, yeah, 10 hours is awesome. I think in John Mark's book he talks about 7 or 8 hours as being kind of the optimum. I guess it depends on age and things like that, that stuff. But make sure you do take those times out to literally just... chill, watch a bit of Netflix. It's all okay. And my old favourite, Bob Goff, says it's easy to confuse busyness with progress and accomplishments with pleasing Jesus. Get some rest. And, you know, we've had a busy year. We've all had busy years and with whatever it is that we've given our time to. Use this time to get rested and recuperated. But it is your choice. You choose what you do. You choose what you fill your time with. And yes, we all have emergencies, and yes, we have to deal with those. But there are some things that we can really, really choose about. So in conclusion, just looking at a few things. Again, John Mark's got a little video. I was going to play it this morning just so we could see his fine face and his fine voice on the screen. But I thought, no, I won't do that. It's a little video blog post on his website. And he calls it Unhurry the Holidays. And it is very American. He recorded it before Thanksgiving. So when the Americans look at their holidays, it starts at Thanksgiving and then sort of goes right the way through to Christmas. And it's really worth a listen. And as I said, it's very American, but actually quite helpful. And he suggested some things that you might want to do to help to manage the chaos. I mean, some of this people just won't want to do because they just won't want to do. Probably some of them I wouldn't want to do. But this is what's helpful for him and his family and might be helpful for you. So he suggests coming off of social media. And that could be for the whole of Christmas period. That could be just for Christmas Day. It could be, well, it's whatever you want it to be. But try and do that so that you're present in your moment with your family, and then you're not doing that thing which we, you know, I do. I go, oh, look at that nice Christmas tree over there in that person's house. And then I'm not taking a look at what's in my home in front of me. So again, I would just recommend that. I mean, I know a lot of you may be into social media, but, you know, some of us are, and that could help us out. Have some phone-free time. And this is literally is putting the phone away for a period of time where you can just, you're not distracted by picking, you know, smartphones are dreadful for this, for being distracted. And actually, I've gone back now to reading books as opposed to reading them on my Kindle or iPad because, just so that I'm not as distracted as I would be. And again, that's quite difficult because, you know, we might need to be on call for various things, but we've all got bits of the day where we could. And actually, John Mark Comer, they call it putting their phone to bed at 8:30 at night. It goes into a separate room, and he doesn't get that up until get the phone up. I'm talking like him now. Get his phone up until after he's had that moment of quiet with God. And then, I mean, it's hardcore, but works for him. He talks about getting your shopping done early. I don't know how many of you have still got loads to do and all the rest of it. But again, get stuff done as early as possible. Be as planned in your approach. Get your wrapping sorted where we're in that zone. And that's great for us. Take some time to Sabbath. Create some traditions which might help you to slow down, and that might be the specific day you put your tree up, which most of us have got our trees up now. That might be going, right, always on the last Friday before Christmas we go to this, or we go to the Arboretum. Create some things which just help you in this moment of madness to just stop, to be with family, friends, whatever it may be. And then he also talks about taking some time each day over the season to reflect on the real reason that this season exists, that Jesus is coming and it's Emmanuel, God with us. Take some time each day to reflect on Advent. But then on the other hand, it also says take some time to celebrate, to practice gratitude, to be with friends, to enjoy this time. Really, really important. So I suppose in conclusion for myself, I just really would like us to try and use this holiday season to just try and get some new rhythms and disciplines into our life to try and just eliminate this need to hurry and rush. And that is around recapturing that gift of margin and space. And as I said, the margin thing, this is the space between your load and your limit. If you're at your limit, then you've got no space to do anything else. You need to have a gap. Again, start your day with quietness and stillness. Again, it's for some, it might be the other end of the day, and that's fine. You know, try not to look at your phone as soon as you get up. I'm trying really hard at that. Recognise actually that technology and digital distraction is a really big deal, and try and limit the reliance on technology over the holiday, screen time, all of these things that are just, you know, bombard us. You know, I know we sit in the living room, we've got phones, we're doing this, we're watching telly, we're doing all these things. Try and just slow it all down a bit. As I said already, it's all about choice. Do the things that matter and that are not going to impact on your well-being. try and declutter a bit over this time. And that might be a physical decluttering of the space around you, but also identify those things that might be cluttering your soul and creating stress in your world that are limiting your ability to be able to connect with God in the way that you want to. And every day, try and check in with yourself. Like, how's my body doing? Probably not great over the Christmas season because we eat and drink so much and all the rest of it. How's your heart? How's your mind? What pressure points might I be looking at? What do I need to do to limit that? And again, John Mark Comer says, slow down, learn the unforced rhythms of grace and find rest for your soul. And just referring back to my cousin's daughter, Amy, which is, I find it kind of bonkers that I'm quoting her in this, actually. You'll have to tell her, Dave. she'll love it. She's a bit anti-religion as well, I think, in many ways. But it says, she said in her article, she said, it's somewhat radical to slow down during what we're told should be our busiest season, that we should be out, everything going. She says, rest mentally as well as physically and let the day go as it's going to go. Don't stress about details that don't matter or try to keep your guests happy at the expense of your own sanity. Spend time with people, but don't just serve them. Or if you don't need to be with anybody, then take some time to yourself. I thought, oh gosh, there's some wise words there from her. And it really is my prayer that over this Christmas season, we will find the opportunity for those moments of slowness and stillness so that we can really find that abiding presence of God at this time, to know that he is Emmanuel, not just hear it, but actually to experience that really powerful thing that he is with you, he is with me, he's not far away, he's close by, because you've got yourself into that position where you can hear him and you can see him and you can feel him. And just one last little thing that I didn't get a chance to put up in my preach. And again, it's from Bob Goff. And he says, Jesus isn't going to try to speak over the noise in our lives. He competes for our hearts, not our attention. So just take that on board. You know, take some of these things away, do what you will with them, but just have a fabulous, fabulous time this Christmas, celebrating, being with people, but most of all, really connecting with God at a very personal level. Amen.